From the first day when I arrived in this country, I found, you know, some issues, hard issues about China. It's really difficult for American people to understand. And if you talk to Chinese, I mean from mainland China, about those issues, they would give you some different answers and discussion. So, for example, in 1994, I just came in this country from prison, and at that time, I was very confident to explain something to American journalism. At that time, I was top issue on CNN, so a lot of journalists interviewed me, and they asked me what my opinion about MFN. Also, I went to Capitol Hill, and there, the Gephardt host a reception, and the whole human rights community joined the reception, and they also raised the question. But after my reply, you know, they were confused. Both journalists and the politicians confused. And they said, well, you might confuse the issue. You might didn't understand the issue because, you know, you have been in prison for a long time. But I know that I pretty well. I mean, I understood the issue pretty well. The problem is that if I gave yes or no, the answer is too simple. If I said, well, you know, MFN means the economic sanction, if the issue is that, if American government should conduct economic sanction to Chinese government, but if I said yes, I would lose support from Chinese, mainstream of Chinese. But if I said no, the journalist always follow the question, what's the difference between you and your government? You are supposed to discipline, you are supposed to opposition to your government. So, from, I think I stayed in Washington, D.C. for 1 year, but after 1 year lobbying in Washington, D.C., I realized there is a big difference between the Chinese community and the American way. I mean, so it's not just, you know, Chinese dictatorship regime and the American democracy regime. I'm Democrat. I'm also from academic circle in China. I'm Chinese. Also, you know, I'm thought by some experts, I mean professors in this country as a leading figure in Chinese intellectual community. But I, as you know, felt difficulty to explain some issues in this country. So I have finished my study in Harvard. I got a master's degree, and also I have passed my comp in Columbia University. I think now I may have a better chance to explain some issues. So I really thanks you know, the St. Claude University to give me the chance. Now I try to explain the human rights issue in China, and I hope you know. If you know that it's the first time, you know, I try to explain the issue. So I hope if you have any questions, you just ask, you know, after my talk. I just first brief my points. And I will focus four issues. First, what's the current situation on the issue of human rights in China? Second, what's the main obstacles to block Chinese to improve their human rights situation? Third, what effective means for American government or foreign forces to help Chinese or to improve human rights record in China? Finally, I want to brief my expectation about the prospect of the human rights issue in China. The first is that in this country, there are different opinions about the human rights issue in China. I don't know when it began. Maybe in 1989, since 1989, it has become the hot issue, one of the hot issues in this country about regarding to China. And so, on one hand, human journalism and the human rights activists said, well, there is a very bad record on human rights in China. The Chinese government has the very, maybe the worst or second worst, you know, reputation on human rights issues in this country. And so they said, well, if we want to improve human rights status in China, we have to put tremendous pressure, including economic sanction, to Chinese government and force them to change the situation. And then also they said, the government is the main obstacle to block any improvement on human rights issues. Finally, they said, if we didn't conduct a sanction, China would become a great power, and without the human rights respect, and then China will be the greatest threat to the United States and the peace in the world. On the other hand, the business community raised the issue, raised argument like that. They said, well, the Chinese government has improved the human rights record. You see what happened in Cultural Revolution, now what happened in current China. Well, the main obstacle to block Chinese to improve, they use the word as the Chinese government to improve the human rights situation is the historical legacy. It's not the government's will, and maybe the government will work, but it's also the legacy from history. So if you want to really solve the problem, you have to develop a relation between, you have to develop economy in China, and when the middle class develop, and then they will change the regime, finally Chinese will respect to human rights. Chinese government with respect to human rights. And then they said, if we conduct a sanction, China will become closed. They will have a worse human rights record. And between this argument, I have my special standard. I will explain. First, what's the current situation? I think it's true. If you look at the record of human rights in China, the Chinese government has a very bad record. For example, they continue to oppress the political opposition movement. Many of my colleagues still in prison. Some of them, for example, Xu Wenli, Qin Yongming, it's the third time they were in prison. Each time they got a longer than 10-year sentence. And also, some of them died in prison because of very bad conditions. And also, in 1997 and 1998, when the Chinese government signed the International Covenant on Political and Civil Rights, enlightened by such action, the Chinese decent organized the first opposition party, Democrats, in China, and the government took a very severe action to break down the party, and they arrested, I think, dozens of activists and leaders, and gave them more than 10-year sentence. And also, from last year, Chinese government began to crack down the Falun Gong, the Qigong organization, and many Falun Gong members got tortured in the prison, and some of them died in prison due to the tortures. And also, if you look at the common people, what happened to common people? For those laborers, they lost their jobs, and their economic and social situation also worse than before, day by day. So, I think it's true the Chinese government has a very bad record on the human rights issue. But I want to argue there are still some improvement in China on that issue. For example, in the Deng Xiaoping's era, Deng Xiaoping, that generation, I will explain why, they promised to set up a legal system and a procedure to, in China. And of course, Deng Xiaoping didn't finish it because of 1989 movement and interrupted his efforts. But also, for Jiang Zemin, he tried to set up a rule of law. It's not because he has a good will to set up such a regime, because without a rule of law, he has no legitimacy to control the China. For example, Mao Zedong and Deng Xiaoping, they had a long time to struggle for the the new government, new regime, and so most of military general respect to them, but for Jiang Zemin, he's nothing. For those old generation revolutionaries, he's nothing. So if he want to maintain his power, he has to set up some procedure and the rule. And so it's one of his. The other, I think, why the other reason why he wants to set up rule of law is because he wants to maintain his legitimacy. He has to develop economy. But if he wants to develop economy, he has to draw. He has to put China in the international economic regime. And you know, the foreign businessmen, for example, American businessmen, when they talk about the human rights, they always say, well, we can ignore the political human rights in China. But if you talk about coffee rights, intelligent rights, they will say, well, no, it cannot be ignored. So they also put pressure, I mean, from the international world, for the Chinese government to improve their, you know, property rights, also the human rights, belong to human rights. So it's why the Chinese government also tried to improve human rights in China. And it's not for, maybe it's not from the general goodwill, it's just from their own interests. They want to maintain their governance and they have to improve. And so, but also from my personal experience, I was in prison twice. The first time in 1976, when I was 17 years old, it's first time for me to stay in, to be put in prison. And at that time, the condition very, very bad. We couldn't eat the food, and also a lot of flies. And the problem is that you couldn't complain. No procedure for you to complain about your condition. If you show any unhappy to the prison guard, they would beat you until you die. Nobody cares because you are criminal. And also you are counter-revolutionary. So it's a situation. But in 1989, you know, I was arrested again. But at that time, the Chinese government had to, you know, open a procedure, legal procedure, to sentence me in the court. I still remember. It sounds funny. My father was, you know, the belonged to high ranking. Belonged to general. And so when he came to see me in prison, he said, "Well, you should say thanks to the government. Why, you know, the government spent so much money to open the court for you? Before that, it's a incredible." Well, of course, people in this country, and you know, the legal procedure is natural. You know, it's an obligation for the government. But in China, it's not so easy. You know, you can ask every Chinese from the older generation, they experience the Cultural Revolution. They will tell you it's an improvement. So, and also I took 21 times hunger strike in prison, and each time I went. But I think in the Cultural Revolution, it's impossible. So when I say Chinese government has made some improvement on human rights issues, I do not want to give them credit to the government. I just want to say there is a chance, opportunities for Chinese and international friends to, you know, to put some pressure on Chinese government to make further improvement under current regime. We still have space. And each time, you know, as you remember, the first time when I took 100 threat, the prison guard very lucky, they just laugh at me. What are you doing, Jun Tao? You know, they would ignore you. You would die. Nobody care you. You won't save their food. They didn't want to, you know, to let you to leave. My father asked me, "Did you really believe you were right?" I said, "Of course. If you believe you are right, what's the most important for you? Survival. Survival. Survive until you see you win." But so they said, "Well, if you just took 100 strikes, you would die. Nobody care you." Actually, it's the first time. It's really the first time we, you know, my 100 strike with my friend Chen Zimin, he also got 13 years in the long sentence in 1989. And we cooperate to, and the 100 strike lasted 20 days. We went. And before that, I was in a small jail, no more than 3 square meters. But after that, they sent me to a hospital, even though the hospital is for mental problem patients. But I had some risk. You may thought, well, It's still very bad condition, but for Chinese, if you ask them, it's not so easy to guess. I mean, the first question, what's the current situation? I want to say China is in transition. For a country in transition, it means some improvement has made, but others still need a way continue to struggle for. So the second question is that what is the main obstacles to block Chinese to make a further improvement? And I think the Chinese government make argument, and like American businessmen, you know, they have the same argument. These are say, well, because of a long history of a federal system, and so you cannot imagine the Chinese improve, you know, to solve the political problem in one day or one night. And it sounds to me there are two issues at debate. The first is that the Chinese have no will, no such culture to improve their human rights because of tradition, their tradition. The second issue is that under the current level of development, it's impossible for Chinese government to set up a complete, you know, regime or political system to respect or secure human rights. It, you know, he always talks to American government and the business, we need a time. The first issue for Chinese is survival and economic development. It's not political and civil rights. Chinese don't care about it. I totally do not agree with such argument. First, I think even if you really read the Chinese, traditional Chinese Confucianism, you know, we know the traditional Chinese political thought come from Confucianism. We can find a lot of arguments similar to human rights. For example, everyone deserves equal opportunity to get education. I think much earlier than the Western world, no more than you are poor or you are rich. And everyone, you want to get a public office, official position, you have to pass the same, you know, the examination, national examination. You have the equal rights. And everyone, it's not elected by people, but the same examination. And if you violate and you have procedure problem, you will, you know, cut off your head, and you will kill. It's a very, and also, everyone deserves to keep their heads, and the Chinese word is that your hair and your body, every part of your body, from your parents, so you have to keep them complete. And but there are some problem. I think there are some problems in the traditional Chinese Confucianism. For example, people not so equal. Opportunity is equal, but if you pass the examination, you become the high-ranking leaders, and you would have some privilege, and comparing with other person, it's the weakness. And also we have some punishment, very very cruel. Well, of course they respect to, you know, that your body and your hair should be complete, but also if you violate some laws, they will cut off and just they think it's a punishment. My argument is that we still can develop some arguments from Chinese traditional Confucianism compatible with the current human rights ideas. The second issue is that Chinese realized such a problem in 1919, one in the new cultural movement. You know, the first time when the Chinese felt, you know, before the middle 19th century, Chinese thought that they were geopolitical center in the world. They didn't care about the other powers in the world. But after conflict, military conflict between the Chinese and the Western powers, and they failed in several wars, and they realized that they are backward comparing with the Western powers. At the beginning, they said, well, we were backward just because of economic system and technology system and military system. So they tried to reform. But in the 1890s, they were defeated by Japanese power. And they really realized, but because Japanese, you know, did a constitutional reform 30 years earlier, and so they won the war. So China realized, their political system really backward, and then they try to reform their political system regime. And in 1911, they conduct a revolution. Chinese set up the first republic in Asia in 1911. You never see Chinese do not want a democracy. We set up a first republic in Asia. And in 1911, at that time, a lot of countries, even Western power, not Republican. And we set up. And then, but the Republic didn't work well. It didn't brought a peaceful political life to Chinese. But the whole China trapped into chaos. The civil war, the warlords, you know, fought each other. And in 1919, a group of Chinese intellectuals reflect why, you know, other countries had enjoyed democracy, but the Chinese didn't. They found out Chinese didn't respect human rights, didn't respect the individual rights. So at that time, they tried to introduce Western individualism to culture, to literature. So I think, I can say, in 1919, Chinese intellectual elites realized the problem in their, on the human rights issue in their culture, and they tried to reform it. And also those discussions, also in the discussion, some Chen Duxiu, the communist leader, it's a founding father of Communist Party. He, just because he respects human rights, he said, well, communist regime is the best way to, now maybe you listen is very ridiculous, but at the time he sincerely believed that, so he founded the Communist Party. He wanted to set up a regime and better than the Western powers, and in this regime they could secure the human rights. And of course he took a wrong way, and then I think 10 years later, the Chinese government took him off from the party. And in 1949, when the Communist Party set up their regime, so-called the People's Republic of China, it means they admit the republic was the best regime in the world. So they under the name of republic to set up their regime. So I want to make argument that even half century ago, Chinese had realized, including communist parties, realized the human rights very important. From my, experience, also I want to say, I grew up in the Cultural Revolution. At that time, we had no chance to know Western ideas. Someone said, well, you struggle for democracy, you struggle for human rights just because you got some wrong idea from a Western world. But actually, when I grew up, no channel to know what American people thought about. I read the story totally, you live a very bitter life. In 1962, the 60 million Chinese died due to the famine. We still convinced by my government to save some food for your American people. We said you suffered from hungry. The government asked us to save food for you. I don't know where the food sent out, but it's a true story. So, so at that time, my really believe actually, when I was a teenager, my father, he's a commander. His rank showed the military rank should be commander in the army. So, at that time, so I got pure communist education. I really believe, communists would take over the whole world. Should take over the whole world. My name Jun Tao is a combination of two Chinese characters. Jun's meaning is in Chinese is military. Tao's meaning is a great wave in the ocean. My name embodies my father's dream. My father dreamed, and also when I was a teenager, I truly believed that. But how can I become a Democrat? And how can the rebel to my father? And when I was in the high school, the Chairman Mao called us to go to countryside, to go to factory. I found, you know, what my parents told me totally lie. And at that time, so I realized, you know, we need to improve the situation. But at that time, we didn't know which one is the better, which is the best regime, because we didn't know alternative. What's alternative to the current regime? We just hope to have a better leaders. So in 1976, actually, the first time I was in prison because I hoped Deng Xiaoping could be a leader. You know, the second time, because, you know, I opposed Deng Xiaoping, I was in prison. But the first time, I opposed to Gang of Four, Mao Zedong's wife, and I hoped Deng Xiaoping to be a leader, and I was arrested, put in prison when I was 7 years as a pupil in high school. But in the prison, I recollected why, you know, at that time, millions of people demonstrated in the streets, but just a Gang of Four very easily cracked on them. Why? I saw there are two problems in Chinese regime. First is dictatorship, non-democracy. Second is, we Chinese didn't respect human rights. And so we got a very cruel treatment. So at that time, I made my own decision. If in the future, one day I had a chance, and I would struggle for democracy. But at that time, I didn't call it a democracy, because I didn't know that. At that time, so people should control the government, should control the leaders. It's not fair, you know, so many people should listen to so few leaders. So it's in the democracy war, you know, one thing of being open the gate and China, and I have a chance to know democracy idea, a lot of theory from Western world, and then step by step I set up my political goal in Chinese politics. So if my argument is that, so from my argument, Chinese history legacy is not a problem to block China towards to respect human rights. The real problem is government policy. The government, you know, the government in transition, I do not say, well, the government just, you know, only wants to maintain their power. You know, all of the government want to maintain the power, you know, Bush, Gore, you know, all of them want to maintain their power. The problem is that they didn't respect the political rights of citizens in China. So, but okay, the third issue, what's the effective mean for the American government or American people to improve human rights issue in China? It's also a hot issue in this country. And I think I do not agree with the containment policy strategy. First, it will not work in Chinese case. It may work in South Africa because, you know, it's small, but in China it's not work. And also, if the European powers and the Japanese powers develop economic relations, your country cannot block, you know, every, you know, relation between the Western world and China. So the second, worth more, it will help Chinese nationalism, you know, popular among Chinese. For many Chinese, if they think American as a friend, they will think American, you know, the value, also a good value. For example, in the 1980s, most of Chinese intellectuals like American people, so they also like democracy and freedom. But if you think American people just want to, you know, to block their development, they will think American as an enemy, including American values. They will think American use their values to erode Chinese will to oppose American power. So if the American conduct some economic sanctions, it will help Chinese nationalism. And those Chinese nationalism will block the further improvement on human rights and democratization in China. Also, and I do not agree about the simple engagement, like a businessman. They said, well, we just develop a relation between two countries and we can, you know, take the human rights issue off the agenda. And I think simply engagement cannot help Chinese to improve their human rights. The middle class businessmen not always support democracy and human rights. For example, in China, most of businesses want to run their business through a special relation between them and the corrupted official. They do not want the open struggle to struggle for every citizen's rights. They want to use money to buy special, you know, looking after from the government, corrupted officials. So if the human rights and the democracy is always, you know, gotten through the hard struggle, it's not automatically, you know, created. So I think that, for me, I think the American government should develop, and the American people should develop the relation between two countries. But we have to also put the human rights issue on the agenda, keeping the pressure on the Chinese government, and especially give the alternative to Chinese, and let them realize why I do not support a containment policy, because if you really cut off all relation between two countries, Chinese will not have a chance to know alternative. You know, I do not believe foreign forces can force China to change. I believe all of change in China depend on Chinese efforts. And if without alternative, Chinese will not make their effort to change their country. So it's my argument. Finally, I want to talk a little about the prospect, and I think that in transition everything is uncertain. I don't know what the direction China will develop. If you conduct a containment or a simple engagement, authoritarian regime may occur in China, or populism also, revolution also may occur in China. All of them, I think, will not respect human rights. All of them will not respect to democracy, maybe under the name of democracy in the populism revolution, but it's not a true democracy. The human, revolution happened in French in the later 18th century, the human, human rights may also not respect it. So for me, I think it depends on Chinese efforts. And I'm in this country and also try to figure out, I try to look at the 100 of cases of democratization in the world in a different area, and try to figure out what strategy is better for Chinese. Also, I think it depends on the national environment. If you can conduct the adequate strategy toward China, you will help Chinese to make correct choice. But if you didn't, you will what happened in German in 1938 and the 1940s. You might help Nazism, grows up in German, and it brought disaster to German people, also brought disaster to the whole world. So I do not have conclusion about the China and in this country. I may confuse you, but fortunately, it's an academic circle. So for academic community, conclusion is not so important. Challenging puzzle is important. I think if China can realize democracy, can set up a democracy regime in which the human rights got a real respect, it depends on both Chinese and American people efforts. So I take responsibility in China in the future when I return to China. But I think you should take a responsibility in this country. Thank you. Actually, the Confucianism is not the only culture even among the elites. For example, when we talk about the Chinese, they didn't respect human rights before, for example, 1949. That's because in village, in the rural Chinese community, a lot of customers didn't respect human rights. It's also Chinese culture. But it's not from Confucianism. Also, Confucianism, when the China, now the You know, there is a so-called neo-Confucianism popular among Chinese elites. They try to use Confucianism to develop a human rights idea and to develop a human rights idea from Confucianism. But, you know, other Confucianism criticize them. You are not a real Confucian. So when we talk about the culture, actually, Chinese culture, like American culture, it's a complex, it's like a salad. It's not, you know, the only one culture. So we have to go through very detail.
You were saying that MFN status would help human rights efforts, correct? The Chinese military is currently the world's largest, standing around 20-some million, and it's widely believed that the only reason they don't go out and attack certain nations, for example, Taiwan, Russia, so forth, is because they lack the technology and the resources to do so. Now, if we grant them MFN status, what kind of guarantees based on past behaviors do we have that they won't actually...
Okay, you know, in 1995, there is a big debate among the experts, I mean, in this country, I mean, about China in this country, about the China threat. And at that time, two journalists who lived in China, maybe several years, they wrote a book, The Coming Conflict Between the United States and China, and it's very popular. But my advisor at Columbia University, Andrew Nathan, cooperated with Professor Robert Ross in Boston College, wrote another book, Great War and the 40 Fortress. In this book, they carefully review the geopolitical situation surrounding China, and they said the Chinese military efforts is reasonable, it's understandable. It's, you know, if China grows as a great power, the most concerned country, which country? Russia, Japan, Taiwan, Korea, Vietnam, India. All of them, you know, they have some debate, some dispute, you know, with China. So he said, well, Americans really do not need to worry about it. And, you know, he said, well, China maintains the largest army, ground army in the world. But, you know, those countries, military ground power, together, I think 2.14 times as Chinese ground power, army power. And also, Japan, at least Japan, South Korea, Russia, and India, army has a high tech, I mean, their military technology and equipment higher than Chinese armies. So their conclusion is that the Chinese power's threat is an illusion. It's not a real threat. Okay, but I give another answer is that what's the real guarantee for Chinese if they become a great power? They do not threat the world and they will become a peaceful force to the world. I think democratization. No other way. You know, containment, I told you, it does not work. You know, if you contain China, what about European and the Japanese? They will develop relations, and the American business company will lose your opportunity, simply lose opportunity, but you cannot block the development in China. So it's my argument.
So what I hear you saying is that basically the Clinton policy towards China is correct, pushing for most favored nation status, but saying that while human rights is important, we need to open our doors to China and trade, because as the Chinese improve their status of life, they will call for change internally. Is that, am I reading you right?
No, I think if Clinton conducts such a policy, that's I think it's adequate, not correct. I mean, from different points, you can have different points about the correctness. But I think it's adequate. But the problem is that, you know, I stayed in Washington, D.C. In 1994, and also I have contact to the Warren D.C. I think Clinton has no clear policy towards China. It seems to me, you know, in this country there are two sides to argue about the policy towards China. On one hand, I mentioned the human rights group, journalism, and they represent the common sense of American people. They opposed to, you know, they dislike Chinese culture. They hate the government's human rights record. The whole American government has a tough policy toward China. But on the other hand, the business community, Chinese experts, State Department, and the huge Chinese community in this country, even though they have many conflicts in the history with the Communist Party, they support, you know, the development of the relation between two countries. And the White House and the Capitol Hill, they just, you know, they just try to balance. You know, if some hard issues are raised on the agenda, for example, it becomes the hard issues, Clinton and the White House, I mean, and the congressmen and the women will show their tough attitude to China. But like Bush also, I mean, the old Bush. And but if the, you know, the in the regular, I mean, time, you know, the Chinese issue is not hard, they will listen to experts on China and China. They will support the development between two countries. I think the Clinton just balance. He has no very clear. But PNTR is the exception. I really think Clinton did the correct thing on PNTR. Because, you know, the last year, NATO formed a Chinese embassy in Yugoslavia. And at that time, Chinese really angry at American people. They said American wanted to contain China. You were enemy to China. But because of Clinton's efforts on PNTR, Chinese realized, oh,
what
is not
PNTR?
PNTR is a permanent national trade apartment, PNTR. You know that in several months ago, it's a hot issue. I think in July or June, it's a hot issue. So on the agenda. So my friend told me, Clinton, every week, Clinton worker 20 to 30 hours try to one by one to persuade congressmen to vote for PNTR. So, and his effort, really to help Chinese to understand American people have no real hostage toward China. They just want to Chinese to have a good, regime and a good, human rights record. It's not a thing that China has. Actually, if you say Chinese government needs to improve the human rights, most of Chinese will support, will like American people. But probably that if you said China is an enemy or is a threat, most of Chinese will not like that. For me, my most concern is to set up a regime, democracy regime in China. I have to get support from, mainstream of Chinese. If Chinese ignore, if I say, well, United States is not an enemy of China. If most of Chinese under, under the name of nationalism think of me, you have been bought by American government and American power. Otherwise, how could you live here? And they would not listen to me, and I would not have a chance to promote democracy. Yeah, I think the American people, if you back up to your founding father, the same. Actually, for most of people, their concern is interest. They also concern, the general principle, but the most concern is still interest. So I think for Chinese, the same. But why, as I talked to you, why the Chinese, older generation communist, for example, Deng Xiaoping, and those older generation of revolutionaries and you know, our young generation of Democrats want some human rights. The reason very simple, because we suffer too much in Cultural Revolution. From our own interest concern, we have to set up a democracy regime. So I think the conclusion is that we cannot, say if China develop high tech and economy, they will want a democracy. It's not true. You know, maybe economic development will consolidate authoritarian regime. You know, in the good, economic well-being, why people want fundamental change in regime? They don't need it. So it's why I said we, on one hand, we have to develop relation between two countries and to help Chinese to develop their economy and high tech, and also give Chinese alternative, some sense about alternative. On the other hand, also, put pressure on the government, let them to make improvement. But you have to let the Chinese people to know those improvement is not a benefit to American government or American people. It's a benefit to Chinese. Well, you have a better regime. You have a better human rights record. It's Chinese. The first, of course, the whole world, the whole world will enjoy the peace. But the first group enjoy the benefit is Chinese. Yeah, in the morning, in the informal talk, we touched the question. But in 1995, I talked to Dalai Lama for almost 1 hour, and after that, he also gave a speech to the 20 or 30 dissident, overseas Chinese dissident in Boston. At that time, Dalai Lama told me and other dissident three principles. The first, Tibetan would not want independence. They want the complete autonomy because they are concerned with free culture. The second principle is Tibetan would realize their political goal through a peaceful way, not a violent way. And the third principle is that they really want Chinese, mainstream Chinese, to respect their religion rights. And I told Dalai Lama, if it's your principle, you would get support from mainstream of Chinese. But for most of Chinese, well, their concern is about, their authority. Sovereignty. And so sovereignty. But why the Chinese concern about that? Because from late 19th century, Chinese, the China has been divided in several parts. So without solid territory and borders, no regime could be stable. For example, we talk about democracy, but the first condition to set up a democracy is a national state. Without a national state, without a stable borders, without a serious idea about the territory, you will not have a stable regime. So it's a Chinese concern. But someone also talked to me, well, what is the difference between you and the government if you say that? But I told most of the scholars in this country, I still think if Dalai Lama's principle is true, I think there is a very confirmed ground for Tibetan people and the Chinese to build up the new political relation in China, in Tibet. Actually, I do not understand why the Chinese government does not open negotiation to Dalai Lama. I really think he's a great figure. And also, many people ask me, but why don't you support independent Tibet? You are so-called Democrats, right? Why you don't support it? And I told them, well, I asked the American, also you are from academic community, why your founding father didn't serve slavery at that time? They know that. It's bad thing, they really know that. But also I think the large states, non-slavery states, if they really raise the issue as an agenda, on the agenda, United States would not exist. Who knows? And also I think for American people would not have a chance to solve the problem in the middle 19th century, because you know if South America, North America, and North America had no you know reason to solve the slavery problem. So I think so from your founding father's experience, you know, also the you know we can talk about you know large state and the small state is a political wisdom is that at one crucial point you have focused to one issue. And so for me, I want to focus to set up a democracy regime in China. You know, after you know the democracy regime is set up, we can talk about a lot of issues in this regime.
In your view, how long it will take to establish democracy in China?
I don't know. You know, it's also an American question. And I talked in the morning, we talk about the issue. For example, when I came in this country in 1994, many journalists and businessmen asked me, do you expect any political change in 2 years or 5 years in China? They never mentioned 10 years or longer. And asked me why, they said, well, the congressman said, we just had a 2 year term. And the businessman said, we had, we had to give annual report every year to you know our board and you know the stock keepers and let them to know how much money they earn. And the business, I still remember, the business told me, well, maybe some American people told you they concerned about you know the human rights in China. They hope the government take a tough policy towards China. But actually, when they concern their interests, I mean their stomach interests, they always ask me to make more money. They don't care about, you know, it's China or it's, you know, from other places. So he said, well, so I know, and I told them, well, democracy China will be better for American business to do your business. He said, well, I know that. From primary education, I got, you know, those ideas. But the problem is that every year, my board asked me to give more interest. So if you couldn't see there was a political change in China before next my annual report, I would develop relations to China, economic relations to China. I would do my business. So it's for Chinese, we have 3,000 years history. We are very patient. You know, in this country, and I think I also told you know the American professor sometimes, and said, well, this country, you know, God really bless your country, and you never suffer from you know those frustrations. Maybe you know civil war is frustration, but I don't know. But I mean, you have some principle, you realize it, and you get an improvement. For other countries, for example, for Chinese, in 1911, we set up the first republic in China, but it didn't work. It brought in a big disaster. So why, you know, now it's my dissertation topic. Why, when the whole world experienced a third wave of democratization, and the Chinese still maintain a dictatorship? And also, you ask Chinese, most of Chinese elites reject radical democratization in other countries. Why? It's because Chinese said, well, we had some lessons from our own history. In 1911, we want workable democracy, but actually it brought in disasters. And then finally, in 1949, we restored the peaceful order, but under the control of the Communist Party. It's worse than Qing Dynasty. So for Chinese, well, we are not so rushed. You know, towards you know, move to a democracy. We have to figure out what's the strategy. You know, otherwise, you know, what happened in Russia, in other countries, Russia is not a battle, it's not the worst case. You know, in some countries, civil war, genocide, you know, occurred. Genocide, yeah. So,
okay. Okay, let's say China finally moved to a democratic country. What is stop large corporations from exploiting like human rights and stuff like that, because you know in most countries where I'm talking about like like Mexico, mm-hmm. they have large U.S. corporations mm-hmm. exploiting human rights and stuff like that. What is to stop that sort of thing from happening in China? You know, when you were talking about the disrespect of human rights that's going on there, wouldn't it rather worsen what you're trying to achieve?
Actually, I don't know. If you talk about something in other countries, I don't know. You know, in China, I know. I'm also not sure. You know, though.
Maybe if I rephrase it then.
Uh-huh.
Okay, you say if China observed what's going on in America. I'm not an American, but
uh-huh.
I, you know, maybe they would be better able to fight for human rights stuff. You know, or stop the disrespect of human rights. Now, in today's society, all over, large corporations are running countries,
okay.
literally doing so. What is to stop that sort of thing from happening in China, further exploiting people's rights and stuff?
I don't know. For me, it's still a question. I cannot say that.
Is there a push in China for like sustainable development? I think that's kind of along those lines too.
This morning I just told some students here, the more, you know, the longer I stay in this country in academic circle, you know, the less confidence about, you know, my opinion about China and other world. Before I came here, I was very confident. But now, the longer you know, in this country, in academic circle, everything could be challenging. So, you know, if I couldn't say something, it's
I'm just saying democracy has its good side and it has its bad side. But when a country...
You know, the democracy does not promise everything. But actually, I mean, democracy does not promise everything. I mean, sometimes democracy does not promise everything. For example, someone wants to... I know that Latin American countries and in Africa countries, when you might have some frustration in economic field, you try to reform your regime because you believe if you have a democracy regime, you will have a better economic performance. But actually, maybe worse. You know, it's some East Asian countries raised the argument about the East Asian model, and they said, well, at some stage of development, you should maintain the authoritarian regime, and then it's better for the government, it's easier for government to mobilize their resources to concentrate to some direction to control the interest group and those arguments. Well, I do not agree with also the East Asian models, but now I cannot talk too much about it. Maybe because I'm not sure. You know, I can see something, but it's not sure.
First of all, since democracy is basically, you know, when people want to be able to have a say in their own government, and that's not always necessary for good government, but do you think that democracy will ever, I don't even know what form, but in some form, do you believe that true, whatever your definition of true democracy is, will be in China, or do you think it can achieve the goals it wants without that?
Oh yes, I believe that because you know you can see the democracy in history, in all of countries, democracy work well. But the problem is still that if you look at the world, the best country are democracy. So it's also empirical rule, and I mean it's a fact. And best developed countries are democracy countries. So I think it's one. The second is that. Well, if you talk to, if we talk about some cases in Japan and in Germany, and in the late 19th century, they also had opportunity to develop their economy, but without democracy regime, not all classes benefit from those development. I think a democracy regime at least offer a chance for some weak group to maintain a fair opportunity to develop their interests within the political community.
Okay.
I have a question on the People's Republic of China and the Republic of China.
Okay.
Could you tell some similarities and differences between the two countries?
Like,
is it, can Republic of China serve as a model for China? Because they are both Chinese culture.
I think it's certainly it's a model for mainland China, because you know the when the Chinese debate about democracy, and they always say, well, it's a Chinese culture, it's not compatible to democracy regime. Democracy is from Western world. But if you look at you know Taiwan, you will find, well, democracy can work very well in the Chinese culture. Well, not very well, actually. And, but the other question is that what's the difference? And when I talk to Taiwan opposition movement, I know their leaders, and I visited in Taiwan in 1995, and I talked to Qiu Yiren, Chen Zhongxin, Xu Xinyuan, and those leaders, and I told them that at least we had four differences between two regions. First, for Taiwan regime, democracy is legitimacy.